Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Kaveh Akbar's debut novel, Martyr, is a peek into how we spend our lives seeking meaning in faith, art, ourselves, others. Cyrus Shams is a young man grappling with an inheritance of violence and loss. His mother's plane was shot down over the skies of the Persian Gulf in a senseless accident, and his father's life in America was circumscribed by his work killing chickens at a factory farm in the Midwest. Cyrus is a drunk, an addict, and a poet whose obsession with martyrs leads him to examine the mystery of his past toward an uncle who rode through Iranian battlefields dressed as the angel of death to inspire and comfort the dying, and toward his mother through a painting discovered in a Brooklyn art gallery that suggests she may not have been who or what she seemed. Kaveh Akbar has served as poetry editor for The Nation. He is the author of two poetry collections, Pilgrim Bell and Calling a Wolf a Wolf. And his first novel is just out. It is called Martyr with an exclamation point, and it's out from Knopf. How are you, sir? What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's my luck to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I'll tell you, I was just at a bookseller's event. I don't think there was a person there who wasn't talking about this novel. it was just a bunch of book nerds sitting in a room saying, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever.
That's immensely gratifying. Yeah. I mean, I guess what everyone is after is an account of unprecedented experience, and to be affirmed in having written something indelibly yourself, you know, like something that, you know, this is a book that is about martyrdom and Iran and suicidality and addiction, but it's also about Lisa Simpson and Sonic Youth and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, it just feels like a very specific, tiny little concentrated dot of personhood, right? And that, you know, the overlapping Venn diagrams here, the overlap is basically one human being in all of existence. It's me, right? And so that it is, that other people can receive it and find value or meaning is, there's no language to wrap around how gratifying that feels.
So I guess I ask this as a diagnostic question, but how are you able to, for use of a word, a different definitional use of the word diagram, but how you were able to give yourself a place where you could tell such an intricate story, but also leave room where it's fully plausible for Rumi and Lisa Simpson to be chatting?
Well, yeah, I mean, the honest answer is not a very romantic one. It's the honest answer is that I spent a million hours drafting and redrafting and redrafting right. and redrafting. It was one of those 10,000 monkeys at 10,000 typewriters will eventually produce Hamlet sort of situations, right? I mean, I'm not saying this is Hamlet, but although there are a lot of allusions to Hamlet throughout. But, you know, it's I write everything by hand, and I just wrote and wrote and wrote. You know, you referenced it being a 300-page book, but it could very easily have been 1,000 pages, right? I mean, I'm someone who writes a lot and publishes very little. Just writing the scenes that I needed to write without worrying about what the book needed, you know, and then only at the very late stages worrying about sort of fitting them together. And then I spent probably 18 months in the process once I figured out what parts were the book, what parts belonged in the book, how to make a kind of irreducible story. I then spent about 18 months retro engineering them to talk to each other sort of seamlessly, in a way that made narrative cohesive sense in the contextless vacuum of a reader's mind.
You write in the book, and I'm going to read this out of context and you can describe it, but you write, so was she a martyr? There has to be a definition of the word that can accommodate her. That's what I'm after. And so the twofold of this question is, you write that in the context of the airline disaster, the mother's plane shot down over the skies of the Persian Gulf, mm-hmm. and that difference between 290 dead and 289 being actuarial. So that's one part of it. And the other part of it is just what brings you to the overall idea then of martyrdom.
Yeah. So in 1988, in July 3rd, 1988, the USS Vincennes shoots Iran Air 655 out of the sky. It's a civilian airliner, and kills 290 people on board, including 66 children. And in the narrative of the book, Cyrus, who's ostensibly the book's protagonist's mother, was on that plane. I am really, really interested in the way narrative art can take the granularity of specific experience, the concrete loss that you can perceive and apprehend and becomes tactile when you're talking to an individual person who is grieving, how narrative art can take that and lay it over the abstraction of a collective grief, right? And so 290 people dead is utterly abstract to my mind. Like,
right,
if it was 293 or 286, right, those values aren't qualitatively different in my higher brain. They don't have substantially different textures, right? It's sort of this middle large number between, you know, it's more than 11 and fewer than 20,000, right? And that feels not like a ethical failure, but it does feel like an ethical crisis for me as a human person, as a psycho-spiritual entity, insofar as I had an overarching ethical conceit in drafting this novel. I was interested in the way that I could illuminate the ripples out of one of those 290 lives. You know, every person to whom Cyrus speaks in the book, every lover that Cyrus takes, every conversation that he has is the consequence of the fact that on July 3rd, 1988, the USS Vincennes shoots Iran Air Flight 655 out of the sky, right? All of these Americans with whom Cyrus interacts have their life unknowingly, indelibly inflected by this event, right? And so when you can apprehend the magnitude of the consequences of one life 30 years ago, right, being shot out of the sky, then you begin to get a sense of the scale of, oh wow, that times 289. And you can lay that over what is happening in the West Bank right now, right? When you see a number like 11,500 children killed, right, it's utterly abstract, right? It is a pulverizingly large number, right? But when you hear an individual account of a parent talking about their daughter, or, you know, an uncle talking about their nephew, right, that becomes so much more concrete, right? I'm interested in the ethical capacity of art to make legible to us the abstraction of quantitative data. I think that this is one of the great projects of art in the 21st century, where one of the projects of empire is to flatten everything to data, right? To flatten everything to abstraction and remove any sort of emotional value or moral value from its projects. You know, art, I think, is one channel of action against that, in that it can dehabituate us to these pulverizingly large numbers. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm curious as the process for you. By the way, Kaveh Akbar is our guest. The name of the new novel is Martyr. You, in putting that to us as the reader, Cyrus's friend Z, talking to another character, Sad James, says Cyrus has been plastering our apartment with these big black and white printouts of all these terrifying faces, Bobby Sands in our kitchen, Joan of Arc in our hallway. And there, you write, he didn't add that he'd been reading about them, this is Cyrus, had been reading about them in the library, his mystic martyrs, that he'd taped a great grid of their grayscale printed faces above his bed, half believing it would work like those tapes that promised to teach you Spanish while you slept, that somehow their lived wisdoms would pass into him as he dreamt. As I read that, I thought, I'm wondering, in your process, did you do sort of the literary equivalent to that?
100,000% for years and years and years until I met my spouse, and then it became a little strange to have these haunting grayscale faces taped over the bed. I try not to put my autobiographical thumb on the scale too much in this sort of forensic way to say this part was real and this part isn't real. But yeah, no, I absolutely did that. And it would be a revolving cast too, you know, as I would get more obsessed with such and such author, you know, their face would go up. And I don't know, it was something about just, there are pictures online. Some at some point early in my poetry life, I did a What Kavak Bar's Bedroom Looks Like type interview, and you can see whoever was up on the wall at that point. I just wanted to be in it all the time. There's nothing in my life that isn't animated by these obsessions. You know, I'm not a particularly interesting person. I don't have a lot of skills. All of my skills in this world are concentrated into this one tiny little dot way out in the margins of human interest, right? And all I want to do is write and be a fellow in recovery.
And this character is in recovery. What I found really interesting, is that you write much more about the now than as the horrible drunken stories of there are mentions, but they're rare. Yeah. Peeing the bed, okay, but otherwise it's pretty much a look forward and very much not a look back.
That's very, very much intentional, and it is very much consistent with my experience of recovery, which is that my impulse is towards endlessly reprocessing the past and beating myself up about this or that decision or misstep. And in my particular program of recovery, one works towards a place where one does not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, but one does try to make amends for the people and harm that they've caused, right? And I also just think narratively, creatively, as an artist, the active addiction is just so certain. Active addiction is so monolithic and one-sided. You know, I mean, I think that there are, you know, I have all the salacious snorting this drug off that wacky surface sorts of stories, right? You know, I have all of those, you know, but so does every other addict ever. You know, I mean, the algorithm of addiction is inexorable. It's like describing your diabetes or describing your hypertension. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not that interesting from the perspective of art, right? The superficial details are maybe a little bit more interesting than, you know, your blood sugar number or whatever, but the actual movement of it, there's just no synapse across which a charge can fire, right? You're just looking at a disease. You're not looking at a character. And this is consistent with my living. You know, I mean, I've worked with, you know, major part of my life today is working with newcomers in sobriety. And a semi joke that this book stuff, the writing stuff, is what I do to keep my dog in the fancy kibble from the vet, you know, the fancy expensive kidney kibble. And then that's my actual life, right? But it's just, it's true, right? I've worked with so many newcomers who all come in more or less the same way, just as I did, right? Resentful and often ambivalent about the interiority of others and with this external locus of control, you know, and then everyone is out to get us. And then I've seen that shift. And that is the interesting part to me. I mean, that's the part that becomes distinct, and every person has a kind of unprecedented story once that stuff starts happening. But the stuff that happens beforehand, the active addiction, the war stories, again, it makes for like a salacious TV movie, but it's just not particularly narratively compelling to me.
There is in the telling of the story, there Cyrus comes to this dying artist who is in the Brooklyn Museum, and it's an exhibit basically of them in their last days, and will meet with people through the last days of her life. There's a passage that I absolutely love that you wrote, because Cyrus is standing in line and is thinking about the other people standing in line and why they're there and wondering why they're there. And there's just this uniformity to it that you write about that I think is fascinating. Everyone in America seemed to be afraid and hurting and angry, starving for a fight they could win. And more than that, even, they seemed certain their natural state was to be happy, contented, and rich. The genesis of everyone's pain had to be external. Such was the certainty. And so legislators legislated, building border walls, barring citizens of there from entering here. The pain we feel comes from them, not ourselves, said the banners. And people cheered, certain of all the certainty.
Yeah.
That is, first of all, it's beautiful writing, but also it does bring us to these extraordinary circumstances that Cyrus finds himself in, and yet we can relate to that.
Yeah, I'm so dubious of certainty in all its forms. This comes from poetry, this comes from also my own spiritual maturation, my own ethical maturation. You know, I think that I spent a lot of time and have spent a lot of time, even in sobriety, groping inorganically to certainties that felt elusive, and trying to declare that I felt this or that thing about this or that thing. And then I felt locked in. And then when presented with new data, I had to somehow defend my old position, you know, and sort of bat away the new data. And I also put together this anthology for Penguin called the Anthology, the Penguin Book of Spiritual Verse, 110 Poets on the Divine, that tracks the human project of spiritual writing from 2300 BCE all the way to the present. So a slim anthology. And I recognized that all of the voices that I was really interested in, from ancient Sumeria to Aboriginal Antipodean poetry to, you know, indigenous Mesoamerican poetries and sub-Saharan African poetries to ancient Greece and Rome, you know, all of the lyric in which I was interested was sort of talking about the same things over and over again, you know, confusion and the way that clarity eludes us, and the insufficiency of language, and also just topically, you know, man's corrosive impact on the earth and man's capacity for cruelty to man, despite our overwhelming similarities, you know, like all of these things just recur endlessly over and over and over and over again, you know, across culture, across time. And it was really illuminating for me. And I think that project is everywhere apparent in Martyr, just my reading and my deep studying for that project is everywhere in Martyr. The way that it moved me away from grasping inorganically to certainties, I think there's a bit in Martyr where Cyrus's sponsor tells him that the only people who speak in certainties are zealots and tyrants, or that the language of certainty is, you know, like this, you know, immigrants are evil and climate change is a hoax, and this Rolex will make you sexually irresistible. You know, this is the language of certainty, right? And so what use is that in a thoroughly bewildered life, right? What use is that in a life that is earnest about seeing unprecedented humanities before? You know, if I want to see you, if I want to see Joe, right, then all of my certainties about what a person is, or what, you know, all of that I need to disabuse myself of all of that before I can actually apprehend the singular unprecedented humanity standing before me, right? And I think that, again, there's a way in which social media has monetized the performance of certainty. There's a way that it has led to a kind of moral obviousness and ethical infantilization across both the rhetoric that we use when we speak to each other, and also across the art that we make. And, you know, it's not a coincidence that the dominant cultural product of America for the past 20 years has been the Marvel movie, right? You know,
right.
this big monolithic good versus this big uncomplicated monolithic bad, right? And again, that just feels totally antithetical both to art and to the kind of spiritual deepening, illuminating, complicating, whatever you want to call it, that I'm really interested in spending my life marching towards.
Have you ever seen the movie, it's a comedy, Airplane?
Of course, yeah.
So the I had the makers, the Zazz, the three people responsible for the film, and they were talking about that the first joke they wrote was the exclamation point.
Oh, that's
Airplane
cool.
Exclamation point.
Yeah.
So this cool. is Martyr exclamation point. So this is Martyr. I mean, this yeah. is you. And at what point did that come into your consciousness? Is that's what you wanted to convey?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Airplane is a good predecessor to that, because again, if that movie had been called Airplane without the exclamation point, there's something tonally that the exclamation point announces, right?
Right.
And I think it does a not dissimilar thing in Martyr, right? If the book had just been called Martyr, right, especially with a name like mine underneath it, you would have expected a very sort of dour affair. You would have expected a very maybe relentless, sad, maybe it would be one of those vitamin vegetable books that you read because you know it's good for you, but you know that you're in for a probably not very good time while you read it, right? I mean, we all are familiar with that feeling, whether or not we care to admit it. And so just on its face, the exclamation point announces that this is also going to be a book where, you know, Lisa Simpson has an extended dialogue and Rumi smokes a blunt outside a hardcore show. You know, I hope, you know, it's not for me to say, but I hope that the book is not relentless and punishing. I hope that what sadness there is in it is made wise by all the joy around it, and vice versa, that the levity in it is made deep by the awareness of mortality. I will also say that the novelist Karen Russell wrote a brilliant essay about this book, so I'm completely cribbing from her. This was her observation, not mine, but I think it's salient and maybe something that I had amorphously sensed, but that she wrapped language around. She talked about how every day of sobriety is, you know, you win the day by not accidentally killing yourself. You win life as a sober person by dying sober, right? And so that's just this sort of rolling ellipses of quotidian, minute to minute, you know, do the next right thing one day at a time. It's just this endless ellipses, whereas the martyr's death is this big staccato blast, right? It's this big moment of revelation that casts the entire life preceding it with meaning, right? You retroactively apply meaning over the rest of the life, right? And it is a very addict way of thinking to believe that one can, instead of, again, the daily slog to create meaning and walk your dog and answer your emails and pay your taxes and be kind in all of these ways that are completely illegible to anyone else, right? You press the meaning button and it immediately casts your life in this different sort of light. The exclamation point feels like the right piece of punctuation for that bit of staccato. There's something a little inorganic and silly about the exclamation point too. It feels silly the way that rhyme feels inherently silly, like the idea that the two best words to describe a situation happen to sound exactly like each other, right? You know, like it's just a yeah. little sort of silly on its face like that.
The quote on the book, Kaveh Akbar is one of my favorite writers ever, and that's from Tommy Orange. There was one of the best things I've ever read. That's a good partnership of writers, the two of you, it seems, that you found each other and realize the importance of each other's voices.
Oh, 100%. And we have weekly page swap where we swap pages every Friday. And that's how these novels came to be. I wrote Martyr and he wrote Wandering Stars, was over the course of a half decade of just sending each other pages on Fridays. And so I've read Wandering Stars, which is the sequel and the prequel to There, There, which for my money is, you know, if any book of American fiction written in the last 20 years is still being taught widely in 100, I think money's best spent on There, There. But yeah, we wrote these back and forth and, you know, this is my first novel. And so sending these pages to Tommy often felt like, you know, showing my macaroni art to Rembrandt or something, you know, like to, which was good. I think that was good for me because I had to sort of, that self-consciousness made me feel like I really had to rise to his level. And, you know, I don't know, I operate well under, you know, I'm someone who procrastinates because it's how I work. But, you know, like when I'm really up against the gun, like I make the, it's sort of when I make the bet, you know, and so adding a little sense of stakes or urgency to the project, I think helped me throughout.
Well, I hope you know through the reception the book has gotten, I'm assuming the input that you've gotten from readers as well as from critics, that you know that this book is much more than macaroni art.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. It's hard. It's hard. I mean, this is not something that I often talk about in spaces like these, but it's hard. Like my vanity is a mile wide, but an inch deep. Yeah. And so appeals to that don't get in really. And, you know, I'm happy to receive them. I'm gratified by them, but appeals to that don't get in. Appeals to my sense of service. That's a little bit deeper, but it's still relative. You know, I've been sober for 10 years. And prior to that, I had no sense of service. I had no sense of, you know, I was just lurching from crisis to crisis. So that's still a fairly young part of myself. Beneath that is the desire to be understood, which is very old in me and very deep in me. You know, it means it was born when I was 2 or 3 and I wanted people to see me and understand me and listen to me, right? You know, the note Tommy wrote me when, you know, we did an event in San Francisco for my book launch and we're doing an event in DC soon for his. And, you know, that note, the note that my spouse wrote me before I headed out for the book launch, and, you know, that essay from Karen, of which I speak, where she really saw the thing that I was doing, you know, she really saw through the large machine made out of words into, you know, my Kaveh Akbar's unprecedented humanity. These are the things that really penetrate.
Kaveh Akbar's new novel is Martyr. It is published by Knopf. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.